Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is David Alex, who is a friend of mine, and he's a playwright. Hello, David.
Morning.
Let's talk about the new play, and congratulations on getting it mounted on Into Infinity, which is opening on the 18th of July at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse. Is that correct?
Yes, On to Infinity opens there July 17th.
It opens the 17th. Okay, I guess the 18th is when we come, right?
Right, 17th is a preview, but it is a performance.
Okay, that's terrific. Tell us about this play, because I know I read a script of this play about 7 or 8 months ago, and I thought it was definitely stage-worthy. So tell us about this process, because you've got to be excited about it.
Oh, very excited. On to Infinity, in a way, brings together two worlds for me. I have a dual major of mathematics and English, and the story is beginning with a brilliant mathematician who is searching for a higher level of mathematical infinity. And as he gets closer and closer to that level of infinity, he loses touch with the finite, the real world. He is, however, human, and he has fallen in love with his former teacher of English literature. And he comes after graduation, he's 21 and she's 42, and tells her he wants to be her lover.
Wow, that's...
And just as he lives in his world of mathematics, she lives in her world of literature. She teaches John Donne, Shakespeare, etc. And at first, of course, wants nothing to do with him. And he's eventually able to show her that the world of mathematics and the world of literature are both the same because they're both music.
Interesting. Because I remember seeing an interview with Stephen Sondheim where he talked about all musicians are really mathematicians, and that was his first love.
Well, what's interesting is if you go way back in history to when we were growing up and computers first came in and they were looking for people to be computer programmers, they didn't take the mathematicians, they took artists and musicians, because they were the most creative, and they were some of the people who became some of the first computer programmers.
That's interesting. So let's go on. So now you have this this student who falls in love with his former teacher, and she resists him, obviously because she thinks he's too young or whatever, right?
And the fact that, as she says, he's a former student. And the mathematician's name is Don, and he has two friends who are his contemporary in ages, and of course they think he's crazy. Luke Wager is the actor who's playing Don, and the two actors who play his friends are Evan Lipkin and Marcus Davis, and you know, they're all doing a great job. Deborah is played by Amy Anderson, and she has a contemporary friend in the 40s, Laurie Howard, and the two of them have a great rapport with each other. And as you can imagine, Laurie, who plays Gwen, thinks that Deborah is crazy for even wanting to get involved with Don. So we have those two worlds sort of coming together, and obviously I don't want to give everything away in the play. We want people to come and see it, but it's a fun experience.
Okay. And what's the complication there? Now, I assume that somehow they get together.
Well, yes.
Okay. Without giving away
without
too
giving
much.
Things
yeah.
away.
Yeah.
But there are some complications. One of them is obviously age. Mm-hmm. The other one is teacher-student. Two different worlds, mathematics and literature. And
they're both very passionate about each of these, right?
And I would say passion is the key word. You picked right up on that. Just as he's passionate about mathematics, she's passionate about literature, and they're both passionate about love. Don is searching for, I don't want to get too mathematical here, but he's going to prove that there are infinitely many perfect numbers. And a perfect number is a number that is equal to the sum of its factors. For example, 6 is a perfect number. 1, 2, and 3 all divide into 6, and 1 plus 2 is 3, plus 3 is 6. And ironically, it is Deborah who gives him the insight to solving this proof. The title of the play is Onto Infinity, and you'll notice onto is one word. And
yes.
The reason for that is he solves it by what's called an onto mapping. And so the fact that she helps him to uncover and discover the proof is a nice meeting of the minds.
Well, you know, you've dramatized math and make it adding human emotion to it, the explanation of math. How did you arrive at that? That's got to be tough to do.
I like threads. Okay. I like arcs in plays. And just as though perfect numbers is a thread that goes throughout the play, the search for perfect love is a thread that goes throughout the play, as is John Donne's poem, A Valediction Forbidding Morning. And John wrote that poem, John Donne wrote that poem, when he was leaving to go to Paris to receive an award. And what happened is that his wife, Anne, had to remain behind, and she was pregnant at the time. And that parallels my play. Of course, John Donne came first. But so those threads go throughout the play, and it ties together nicely, I think.
Okay. And what got you to write this play?
When I write, and I've written 10, 11 full-length plays and about 18 one-acts, I usually take one of two approaches. One is I begin with some characters and see where they want to go, or I have a theme and develop the characters to go with that theme. In this particular case, I had the characters in my mind, and I wanted to see where they went. And what was fun for me is that Don, the mathematician, and his two friends were all distance runners. And as I think you know, I was a track coach for 30 years at Hoffman Estates High School. And I helped to model the three students on three runners that I knew in terms of personality and what have you. And that made it fun.
Yeah, so they're fictionalized characters, but they're based on some real characters.
Correct.
Well, that's good. That's one of the fundamentals of writing, they say, is write about what you know.
And it's interesting you say that because I have a dual major of math and English, and people always say, write what you know. And my first five or six plays, I intentionally wrote on different subjects. I didn't want to take, well, some people may call it the easy way out, but one of the things that I love about writing is that I make new friends. And by that, I don't mean the friends in the theater, I mean the friends on the page. And the characters that I create and what happens to them and what they say. And that is really the most fun for me. So I really didn't follow people's advice and write what I know. However, you know, life is funny. I wasn't writing what I know, but all of a sudden it turned out that all that time I was, because I have certain themes in my mind that I had when I was growing up, and they sort of snuck into my plays.
That's interesting.
Well, as you know, I received two grants from the Illinois Arts Council, and in applying for those, I had to write an artistic statement. And I had never done that before. One of my friends has always said to me, you know, I could never teach your plays because they're all so different. And when I sat down to write this artistic statement, I found out, hey, there are some themes, there are some threads that go through my plays. One of them turns out to be from my two favorite writers. I remember when I was in high school. You remember high school, don't you, Tom?
Yes.
Okay. When I was in high school, junior year, we were studying transcendentalism, and I read Emerson and Thoreau. And I go, wait a minute. We're finally reading two people who are right. And those people and the idea of an individual and society just struck me immediately that I said out loud in class, we're finally reading somebody who's right. One of the underlying themes of my work is the strong desire for man to remain an individual in society, true to himself, and how this conflicts with the needs of a society that demands some level of conformity to ensure society's survival. And I found that my writing often portrays an individual struggle to balance these conflicting needs and forces, but the tragedies of those who cannot do that. And I didn't really set out to do that. But all of a sudden, these themes started coming out in my plays, and I didn't realize they were there.
That's usually the strongest ones, when you don't realize that they're there, right?
Right. Well, I have found that if you try to force an issue, hit the audience over the head with it, you're not going to be successful.
I agree. I hate that when characters preach, right, when they give the speeches, and all you know, it's the playwright trying to shove his philosophy down their throat. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Subtext is the key. And also in this play, in the first few drafts, there was lots and lots of math. And one of my goals was every draft, less and less math. I have a play, By the Rivers of Babylon, which was staged by the Chicago Playwrights Center, and they used the space at Loyola, Kathy Mullady Theater. And the biblical prophet Jeremiah is a character in the play. Now, it's not a religious play, but it takes place with some religious characters during the fall of Judea. And each draft had less and less, quote, religion or God. Because what we have to remember is we're writing a play. Those themes can still be there, but it's a play. So I agree with you. Let's not hit them over the head with it. You want to write an article? Write an article.
Yeah. Yeah, and as soon as that happens, everyone turns off. So now they could care less. But from my reading of your play is you really care about both of these characters, and you're cheering for them, for things to work out for them.
Absolutely. And besides caring for the two characters, I also care for their friends, because friendship is a very important ingredient in anybody's life. And at first, the characters, Don, who's, as I said, played by Luke Wager, his friends think that he's crazy. And Laurie Howard, who plays Gwen, thinks that Deborah, Amy Anderson, is crazy. And eventually they come around and support their friends. So it's through that network of friendship that the relationship is built.
Well, so tell us the process now of this play, because I know you wrote this a couple of years ago, right?
Right, and in fact, it's interesting. I was just telling Brandon Hayes is the director, who, by the way, is just doing an incredible job. Even though the play was produced once before and it's had, you know, several readings, the first reading was at Victory Gardens, which I'm very grateful to, has always been warm and helpful in giving my play some readings and some direction and input. But Brandon has really a tremendous vision of the play, not just for the set, but of the play. And I thought I'd go back and look up some early drafts of it just to share some of my initial writing with Brandon. And I found out, I didn't remember this, that the first drafts were in 1993.
Oh, so this has been on your mind for a while.
And not only that, there's a character in the play that I found called Rosalind. And I told Brandon, I swear to you, I have no idea who this character is. It's been long gone. It was really funny. I don't know who it was. But one of the things that I did while I was writing is have my students help me. I taught at Hoffman States High School and retired in 2003. And over time, I'd have students come over to my house, do a reading for me, cold reading, just so I could hear it and discuss with them what they thought was going on with the play. And so it started that way. And then I had a reading at Victory Gardens, and they gave me some great input. And some more revisions, another reading here and there, and at one time it was selected Prop Theater as part of this new play network, and they conducted a workshop with the play, and Maggie Spear was involved in that. And then Talisman Theater, which is no longer around in Elgin, picked it up to do another workshop with it, and they asked me who I'd like to be in the cast, and I said, well, Maggie was just wonderful in the Prop Theater one. I'd like to use her again. Well, as it turns out, I didn't realize this, but Maggie was artistic director of Bowen Park Theater. And theater's been going for a long time, and they usually do traditional works or what have you. And for the first time, they decided to do a new work, which was On to Infinity. And it was a wonderful production, and it was a production. And from that production, I was able to do even further work on it because, you know, until it's up, it's not up.
Yeah, that's true.
And then Maggie is also artistic director of Azusa Productions, which over the years has been active in Chicago. I remember seeing they did Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs and a lot of Sam Shepard shows. In fact, recently they did a poetry marathon and short story readings. And she said that she'd like to bring On to Infinity to Chicago. And so Azusa Productions is doing the Chicago premiere at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse.
Well, let's put a plug in for Chicago there, because this is now the home for new playwrights.
Absolutely.
Between dramatists and Victory Gardens and a lot of these workshops, a first look at Steppenwolf and smaller companies who have the guts to do like this lady's doing for your play that say that can honor works.
Sure, I mean, that's what it's all about. You have to realize when Shakespeare wrote his plays, the first time they went up, they were new works.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So Chicago is very warm and embracing of playwrights and actors, you know, their first show up and what have you. So after Maggie decided to do the play and asked me about a director, I said, well, you know, I worked with Brandon Hayes on a one act at Bailiwick.
Yeah, tell us how you met Brandon.
Sure. Well, Brandon, as you know, worked with you for a while.
Yeah, he was one of the best young writers as a reviewer that Chicago saw, and everyone thought
that. And that's how I knew him, because I see a lot of theater.
Mm-hmm. You sure
and,
do.
Yeah, I see it quite a bit.
A little aside, almost everywhere show I go to, I find David there, or David finds me there. We're the two junkies, I would say, of Chicago theater.
I don't go that much to the big theaters, the Broadway in Chicago, so I really like the storefronts, the 30, 40 seats. You know, every theater, when they do a show, of course, is excited. The adrenaline is going. But there's something special about when it's a new company. It's a combination of adrenaline and panic.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And you discover things. So I really go and try to support, and by being there, you support them. And you meet some new actors, new directors, and what have you. So I had known Brandon and spoke with him a few times, and he had mentioned he was a director, and I know that from doing some research he had won some awards in Michigan and what have you as a director. And Bailiwick has their one act festival, and I'd been at once before several years ago and written a new play, and it was a tough play because it's about half an hour and there's one line of dialogue in the play.
Wow.
And it's not mime, but it's action. It's based on the opera Piazzi. And so I asked Brandon if he'd be interested in directing it. He read it and he goes, absolutely. And the process was so important. And what theater people realize, sometimes more than the audience, is the show is not necessarily just the show. It's the process, the rehearsal, working with the actors, the director, the tech people, etc. And Brandon and I developed such a tremendous rapport that when it came time for this, and I was so impressed with his work, I asked Maggie if she'd at least interview him. And she, too, was struck by him, and the rest is history, shall we say.
Great, because that's important. I know you had talked about that way back when we were talking about some of your plays, about your criteria for putting up your work. Because, you know, some playwrights are just so happy to have it produced, they'll let a theater group or a director or actors just butcher their work. That you want to be a little bit more hands-on, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So what's your philosophy totally on that?
Well, it's hands-on, but, you know, one of my favorite quotes that I use with a director I haven't worked with before is this. My wife bought my son a book of quotes, and I was looking through it, because quotes are, first of all, besides fun to read, they're a great source of ideas and what have you. And I found a quote, and I can't remember who these people are, but it's an actual director speaking to the actual playwright, and the director says, "Shut up, Jack, or I'll direct the play as you wrote it." Because the key is, it is collaboration. And I like to say that the playwright's the playwright, but the director is the director. And when it goes up, it is the director's show.
And oh, okay, so that you... But how much liberties do you give them? Because you do have... I keep approval of the director.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Brandon is very very hands-on, very reputable, and any suggestions he has, he always runs by me and says, this line's not working, what do you think, and what have you. I mean, he would never change a line. But I would say approximately 100%
okay.
of the suggestions that he's made have been right on and have come up with some changes.
So not only is it a matter of trust that you found a director, in this case in Brandon Hayes, who thinks like you. You guys can both look at from the same point of view.
Well, more than thinking like me, I wouldn't say he thinks like me, but what's more important is that I trust his judgment.
Oh, okay.
Because you don't always want somebody who thinks exactly like you, because then you're just getting a mirror image.
Yeah, that's true.
You want a different perspective. And that's the same thing that the actors have brought to the show. He's done a lot of backstory in rehearsal. And one of the things that I like about backstory is, emailed Brandon one time when he told me for the other play he was doing backstory was that, great, I can't wait to see what I didn't write.
Okay.
And it really fleshes out the character in the story, which then I go back and make some revisions. And the improv, so to speak, okay, the backstories that the cast have done has just been remarkable. And Luke, as the lead, goes through such a transformation.
Yes, he does. That character really does, yes.
That it's been very interesting to see what he's done with that particular role.
Well,
very,
let's talk
very
about
strong
casting now.
Okay.
Some playwrights are so hands-on that they have to approve everybody in the cast. Others leave it to the director or the producers. What's your stand on that?
Well, my stand is this. I like to be able to give my input, but I have no role in the decision-making process. I mean, let's be realistic. The director has to work with the actors, and it's more than just can they act and say the lines and portray the role, but what's the rapport between the director and the actor? What's the rapport between the actors and other actors? They have to be able to get along and mesh together in their roles. And this has been a very successful production because of that. At the audition process, I was at the auditions, okay, and you know, gave my input, and that was my input. And he makes the decision,
okay,
which is the way I feel it should be, what have you.
And how close were you? Can you say that? How close you were to what you thought? Were you pretty much the same people?
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, obviously, yes. I mean, if I strongly objected to somebody, yeah, you know. And really, I haven't seen these actors before. The only two that I've really known from before is Laurie Howard, who plays Gwen.
Yeah, I've seen her around. Sure,
yes,
she's been around.
She was also in an early reading, believe it or not, of On to Infinity. But she was Deborah, not Gwen. And Larry Wiley, who plays the grandfather, I never worked with before, but you know Larry Wiley.
Oh, yeah, Larry's been around.
I've seen him
sure
many times.
One of the top non-act guys around.
A true veteran. Yeah. And so when we're able to, I'll say snag Larry, I was very pleased because he brings a lot of experience to the show.
Well, for you actors out there listening, you heard when David said people that did readings sometimes got the roles. Because I've talked to actors in town, so I don't do readings unless they're going to cast me or something. Don't be crazy, right?
Oh, of course not, because first of all, theater in Chicago is a collaboration. So you can't think about, am I going to get the role? Hey, you're helping a fellow artist. And so it's all a collaboration together. And I'll tell you, if you have time, Tom, a funny
sure,
story is that, as I said, I used to have actors come to my home when I was teaching at school. And one of the readings was On to Infinity. Well, when it came time to cast it for the Bowen Park production, an actor showed up who was one of my former students who was in a reading at my home. And I didn't know he was auditioning. And he shows up with the script that he used at the reading, which has obviously gone through some revisions. And sure enough, he got the part.
So there's a lesson there.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes if you put your mark on a role, even if there are different people involved in it, maybe it's just that the actor sort of absorbed it earlier.
Right. And, you know, I know this podcast is listened to by theater people in cities all over the country.
Yes. Yeah.
And
about 30% of our listenership is outside of Chicago.
And really encourage artists to come to Chicago. Here's a perfect example. A new play that I was working on called Adrift, I needed to hear the play. And so I contacted some actors to come over to my place and do a reading for me. Two of them I knew, and there's two actors who I really wanted to use who I've seen on stage who I've never talked to. They didn't know who I was. And so I just called them up and said, my name is David Alex, I'm a playwright, and I have a new play, I'd like to hear it read. Would you be willing to come over? More than happy, they came over. I brought in some pizza, etc. And we did the reading and talked about the play. And it was very successful because it's part of the process. And that is what Chicago theater is all about.
Yeah, I agree. And I know last year I saw over 50 world premieres.
Mm-hmm.
This is the town. And not, it's not only the Tracy Letts of the world, but
right,
everybody else. And so let's talk about some of the other plays you've done.
Well, this has been a very, very busy time. You know, sometimes when it rains, it pours. At the same time that I've been having the rehearsals for On to Infinity, I've also had another play called Eroica that's being workshopped in Elgin. And this is a play that's knocking on the door. It's placed in 5 national writing competitions, a finalist in 2, and a semifinalist in 3. And, you know, I give these young actors a lot of credit. They got a lot of chutzpah. There's a new theater company in Elgin called Nothing Special Productions. And they're recent college graduates, except for 2 of them, who are still seniors in college. And they formed a theater company in Elgin, and they've done a few productions over the years. And they wanted to start branching out. So they contacted most artistic directors in Chicago. They just emailed them, called them, and wrote them, and said, we'd like to work on a new play. Can you suggest anything? Well, one of them gave them my name, and they contacted me, and I sent them Eroica. Now, Eroica is a play set in a small town in the 1960s during the Vietnam War.
Okay.
And there's 4 characters, 2 men, 2 women, which is just right for this particular theater in terms of age. And Eroica is a timely play dealing with timeless issues. Very briefly, a woman is very patriotic, supports the troops, and organizes letter writing sessions to tell the troops, we're behind you, we support you. Her husband is a former basketball star of the school and is now the coach. So you know what that puts him in terms of the pecking order in the town.
Yeah.
And
right up there.
Right up there, yeah. At the very top. Well, he has secretly faked a medical condition to avoid the draft.
Which was common in that era, as we know. Yeah.
But the conflicts with his wife, who, besides being very patriotic, her son is missing in action.
Mm.
And you have to remember, small towns and big cities are entirely different. Even what's going on right now with Iraq, small towns, very patriotic.
Yeah,
very
that's true.
Patriotic and stand behind the troops, etc. The third character is the coach's sister, who's a nun, physically disabled, and participates in prayer vigils against war. And the fourth character is a former athlete of the coach, very bitter for being kicked off the team, has learned the coach's secret, and is bent on revenge.
Ooh.
So the play has had several readings. Again, thank you, Victory Gardens. Had its first reading at Victory Gardens. And has placed in some competitions, but it's never been workshopped, which is an important step.
Yes.
And they said, we'd love to workshop it. And so that's what we've been doing. So I take that 39-mile trip out to Elgin a couple of days a week, and I've been at the rehearsals and the readings. And July 4th is when the workshop started, and it went up this past weekend, and it's going this week also, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday in Elgin.
Great.
So I'm very pleased. Again, you know, it's tough to get playwrights to change the script. This is what I wrote. This is my baby.
Yeah.
But again, through the process out there, I've made several changes during the workshop based on their suggestions.
So that you would say to a young playwright, the balance between holding on to what you wrote, if you really believe in it, and when you hear it played out by actors or in a reading or a director in a rehearsal with an actor, it just doesn't work, to be flexible?
Yes, but you know, it's a two-sided coin. It's a double-edged sword, if I can throw in any more cliches. Because what happens is this. On one hand, yes, you have to listen to other people. One of the things I'm a firm believer is, I'm the playwright, I know the play I wanted to write. The actors and the director tell me what I wrote.
Okay.
They're not always the same thing.
Yeah.
However, what happens is you lose your play sometimes. You make so many changes, too many changes, and you lose the play you started out with. And I can't tell you how many times that all of a sudden somebody, gives me an idea, and I go, it's a great idea, and I realize, wait a minute, that was in my play 7 drafts ago. And you go back to that. So that's something I'm guilty of, too, that I have to realize, yes, it's good to listen to people, but you can't lose your focus. You
okay.
can't lose your focus.
All right, in the interest of time
sure.
now, let's give a little commercial for On to Infinity, where it's playing, what days, and so forth.
Thank you very much. On to Infinity opens July 17th. That's the preview performance. The opening night is Friday, July 18th. It runs July 17th through August 24th. Production days are Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 o'clock, and Sundays at 3 o'clock. The tickets are only $20.
It's at the Victory Gardens
Greenhouse. At the Victory Gardens Greenhouse, 2257 North Lincoln. That's the original Victory Gardens Theater. The tickets are $20. Students, seniors, industry are all $15.
Well, that's terrific.
And the phone number is, if I can throw that in.
Yes, throw it in.
773-871-3000. And they can go to the Victory Gardens website. And, of course, they can come to your website, ChicagoCritic.com.
Right, and it'll be on our Theater in Chicago,
Theater in Chicago.
Listing, too. Well, we're excited about this, and we've got a couple minutes. Let's talk about some of your background.
Okay.
A couple things that I know. You remember the Peace Corps?
I was in the Peace Corps for 2 years, yes.
Okay. You remember the Jeff Committee?
I'm a member of the Jeff Committee.
And where I got to know you is you were a saint.
Yes. When I lived in Hoffman Estates, I would make the trek into Chicago to see theater. And the Saints is a tremendous volunteer organization, which ushers, as you know, at theaters, and also does some behind-the-scenes work in terms of stuffing programs, making calls, or what have you.
They're invaluable to the theater community.
And when I was living in Hoffman Estates, I would see maybe 2-3 plays a week, and that was a trek. After I retired in 2003, I moved to the city. And
you're that trend of the former suburbanite, and we're over here on Lincoln Park West.
I grew up in Chicago. I lived in Rogers Park, and then after eighth grade, we moved to the suburbs, and then I started teaching in the suburbs, and I love Chicago. I mean, I live right by Lincoln Park Zoo. As I mentioned, I was a track coach for 30 years. I still run every day. I run through the zoo and run along the lake, but now I see closer, I'd say, 18, 19 plays a month, and it's wonderful.
And you learn from that too, right?
Absolutely. And you learn two things. You need to see what works, but you also need to see what doesn't work. And sometimes, and as you know from reading the reviews in theater in Chicago, not all critics agree on every show.
That's true.
And sometimes I'll go see a show that some people think isn't working because I need to see what they feel isn't working. And sometimes I agree it's not working, and sometimes I go, no, it is working.
So if you see this tall, skinny guy with the glasses around who always has, another one of David's trademarks is he always has something that says Superman, the belt buckle,
right.
The T-shirt, the tie. Tell what is the significance of Superman?
Well, it's not just Superman. Growing up, I always enjoyed people doing the right thing, so we speak. It was Superman, the Lone Ranger, Robin Hood, Zorro, all those kind of people.
So you love the heroes.
I love heroes who are doing the right thing for the right unselfish reason. Oh. And there's just something about Superman, too. But to tell you a secret that not too many people know, and people who know me know that I am a Superman fan, the number one that I really always admired was the Lone Ranger.
Okay.
And the reason for that is, Superman does good, but he has these superhuman powers.
Yeah, that's
true. Lone Ranger was mortal, just like you.
Yeah, okay. Do you carry a silver bullet?
No, I don't have a silver bullet.
Okay. David, last question.
Sure.
Where do you hope to be 5 years from now? What's your career goals?
Well, career goals is that I hope to be successful. And what successful means is that I've written plays that I feel means something to me, and that I've been able to work with fellow artists who have been able to bring those plays to life. I don't have goals of awards and that kind of recognition. If they come, that's great. But I enjoy creating the new friends that I've made on paper and then working with living artistic friends to bring those paper friends, so to speak, to life.
So it's about the art, creating the
art.
It's
about creating the art, yes.
Well, that's certainly valid, and keep up the good work. And folks, thanks for listening, and go see a play this week.